Okay, so now we've heard about how to try to maximize the likelihood of decreasing complications with your patients, as well as other alternative means to try to treat them. But what about now that patient with the small abscess that's now sitting in your office, it's been treated, what are you going to do with that patient? Dr. Michelle Cowan's going to help us with that. She's from the University of Colorado. She's assistant professor of surgery. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you to both Dr. Wise and Dr. Hall for inviting me to present today, and thank you to all of you for coming. I have no disclosures. So as has already been discussed here, and as most of us already know, the incidence of diverticulitis is increasing. And whereas we used to think that about 20 to 30% of patients with just the simple outpouchings of diverticulosis would progress to diverticulitis, we now know that that's not the case, and that's a gross overestimation. We now think that, depending on the literature that you read, that only about 4 to 5% of patients with simple endoscopic findings of diverticulosis are going to progress to diverticulitis. Of those patients that present with diverticulitis, we think that about 20 to 30% will present with a complicated presentation. So fistula, stricture, obstruction, or peritonitis, whether it be purulent or feculent, as well as abscess, which is what we're going to discuss today. And while there's little debate for the role of surgery in fistula, stricture, perforation, there is ongoing controversy as to the role for elective surgery after successful non-operative treatment of an abscess. So before we get into the controversy, how do we currently treat these abscesses and what are the guidelines? So historically, everyone who presented with an abscess required emergency surgery. And that still remains the case for people who have generalized peritonitis, who are septic, who are ill. But what about that patient who's more stable? With advancements in medical and radiographic technology, we can now avoid resection at the index presentation in up to 90% of our patients, thus avoiding the morbidity of surgery, which we all know can be a very complicated surgery, as well as avoiding the need for an ostomy. So typically, for abscesses 3 centimeters or less, oftentimes antibiotics alone are sufficient. For those who fail to respond to antibiotics or for those whose abscess is slightly larger, 4 centimeters, we typically recommend percutaneous drainage. We typically recommend you go transabdominal or transgluteal. Try to avoid a transrectal approach, as this can complicate your potential elective surgery and specifically your pelvic anastomosis at the time of the operating room. Once they have successfully resolved their non-operative management of the abscess, current guidelines from the Society of Colon and Rectal Surgery recommend that following successful medical treatment of a mesocolic abscess of 5 centimeters or a pelvic abscess with or without percutaneous drainage, elective colectomy is typically advised. However, as we learn more about the natural history of diverticulitis, this is starting to be debated, specifically because we now know that diverticulitis is not a progressive disease. All of our patients come worrying that after they've had, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 episodes, the next one's going to be the big one, and we now know that that's not true. The big one's going to present at the initial presentation. If they recur, it typically mirrors the initial presentation or is less severe. We know that because operating electively has not decreased the rate of emergency surgery. So if it's not a progressive disease, do we have to operate after successful non-operative management of an abscess? So what does the data show? Most of the data, unfortunately, is retrospective and single institution. And I'm not going to get in too much nitty-gritty, but this is a group from the colorectal group out of Minnesota who retrospectively looked at over 200 patients with CT-documented diverticular disease and abscess. For most patients, it was their first presentation, and for most patients, they required percutaneous drainage in addition to antibiotics. And what they found was that there was about a 10% treatment failure rate, which is consistent with what we've already talked about. But of those patients who completely resolved, there was a cohort of 32 patients who were managed with non-operative intent without any plan for an elective surgery. And what they found was that only 30% of those patients recurred. So if you're a glasses half full type of person, that means 70% of people did not recur. And this was up to over 5 years for follow-up. When these people recur, it was not in a progressive manner. They presented pretty much the same way they presented the first time, if not more mild, and none of the patients had to go to surgery. When they looked at risk factors for who recurred, size of the abscess seemed to be the biggest predictor. What's interesting to me in these 32 patients, and they obviously say it in their data, these patients, again, this is retrospective, were self-selected because they were thought to be too high risk for an elective surgery due to comorbidities. So cardiopulmonary comorbidities, immunosuppression from solid organ transplant, as well as neutropenia from bone marrow transplant. And despite that, that's classically the people that we think we have to operate on, right? Because the next episode's going to be even more morbid. Despite that, what they show is that, for the most part, they were no worse for the wear. But what it begs the question is, what if we did the same study in people who are healthier? Well, we don't have that data, but the closest we get is this data from Canada, again, looking at people with CT-documented diverticulitis with abscess, and their standard of care that they mention in their article is that if you successfully resolve after antibiotics and percutaneous drainage and you become asymptomatic, they actually don't offer you an operation due to OR availability. So, kind of takes away some of the selection bias. And they actually found the same recurrence rates, about 30% at around 2 years. Again, most of the patients did not have progressive disease. They presented the same way, if not more mild. However, two people did require surgery. So they, both of these articles kind of say that it's an acceptable and safe option. Well, not all the data is as warm and fuzzy. So this is from USC. Again, very similar patient population, single institution, retrospective. And they actually show almost double the recurrence rate at shorter time. Now, some people argue is that persistent disease versus recurrent, and every institution had a different time frame for what they distinguished between persistent and recurrent. But for their conclusion, it was, you know what, the natural history of diverticular abscess is such that it has high morbidity and high recurrence rates, thus we should still offer people an elective resection. So what do we do with all this? Well, without any prospective randomized control data, all we have is a meta-analysis, which basically doesn't help us. It shows us that these people have a higher risk of recurrence at about 30%. And you can kind of see their pie chart here. A lot of the studies, people still underwent elective resection, and we don't really know why. Was it because we still follow the guidelines, we're still offering them, or were they still smoldering? So what I think this data tells us is that it doesn't really give us an obvious answer of what to do, quite frankly, and it definitely doesn't change our guidelines, but I think it allows us to talk to our patients and individualize their care and try to come up with their own risk of recurrence and their own risk factors and where surgery might fall in their disease. So what are the risk factors for recurrence? We've already kind of discussed abscess as one of them, specifically an abscess of 5 centimeters or more, which was also found in these individual studies. Pelvic and retroperitoneal location, which is not surprising because that can be a very difficult place to not only treat with antibiotics but to access percutaneously. A fairly long segment of the colon, as well as a family history of diverticulitis. We're starting to learn, especially out of twin studies from the Netherlands, that there is a genetic component to diverticulitis. And while we always focus on the family history of cancer, the onus is really on us to elicit that history of diverticulitis from our patients. So what about the patient who has a recurrence? Or what about the patient who gets better, but they still kind of have some twinging pain, they're not completely asymptomatic? What should we do with those patients? Well, data from the DIRECT trial suggests that we offer them an operation. So this was a randomized prospective control trial looking at patients who had documented diverticulitis by scan with either recurrent or persistent symptoms as defined here, and they were randomized to either go under elective sigmoidectomy or continued surveillance with non-operative management. And what they found was that regardless of which quality of life indices you measured, surgery always won. And almost 50% of the people in the conservative group wound up undergoing surgery for persistent symptoms. So what do we do with this, right? This is kind of what I do with it. Number one, you have to rule out a fistulous connection to the colon. If this person got antibiotics and a drain, and that drain still has stool output, or you get a drain study suggesting that there's still a communication to the bowel, they must undergo surgery. But for the person where the drain can be pulled, they never got a drain, they're feeling better, what do you do? And caveat being, all these patients technically qualify for surgery. So if you have a 40-year-old man, 2-centimeter abscess, resolves on antibiotics alone, I personally would offer him non-operative surveillance and kind of counsel him on the risk of recurrence. That said, if he presents to me with the second, third, fourth episode, I would offer him a resection based on the data we have from the DIRECT trial. Same person, but now a 5-centimeter abscess, much higher rate of recurrence, as we kind of already mentioned. Again, I would offer him a resection. And then the last one's kind of the gray zone for me. 5-centimeter abscess, high risk of recurrence, kidney transplant patient. How healthy is that kidney transplant patient, right? Because that one child showed us even in the unhealthiest of patients, 70% don't recur at 5 years. So I think this data hasn't changed necessarily what we do, but allowed us to have this conversation. So in conclusion, diverticulitis is not a progressive disease. Severity will predict severity. In an asymptomatic patient, the decision for elective surgery should be individualized as long as you rule out a persistent communication or fistula to the bowel. When they do recur, they're not usually going to recur in a progressive manner. And then if you have recurrent or persistent or what I call smoldering disease, that warrants a surgical resection. Thanks.